Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Katie Munoz. If this song isn't playing at a party in South Florida, then something has gone terribly wrong. It's by Calle 13, the experimental hip-hop group from Puerto Rico. Their music has been groundbreaking for Latin urban genres, winning over 20 Grammys and Latin Grammys. Ileana Cabra's formal entry into performance was with her older brothers, Residente and Visitante of Calle 13. Ile traveled around the world with her brothers as the female vocalist for Calle 13. Her stage name was PG-13 because she was just a teenager at the time. But the first time she sang at a Calle 13 concert, she sang something a little different, an emotional ballad by the Afro-Cuban singer La Lupe. Yo confiaba ciegamente en la fiebre de tus besos. Mentiste serenamente. That first performance set the tone for her eventual solo career, which she launched in 2016 with the debut album Inevitable. Ile expanded her musical heritage while making it her own. Her dad and her siblings collaborated on the album, and her late grandmother wrote some of the songs. Ile's third album, Nacarile, came out last year. She'll be performing this Thursday in Fort Lauderdale as part of her U.S. tour for the album. And she joins us now to talk about it. Welcome, Ile.
Thank you. How are you?
Good. How are you today?
I'm good, good.
I'm so glad you're with us. I want to start by just talking about some of the women who have inspired and influenced you. And we heard some of that amazing bolero that you sang by the Afro-Cuban singer La Lupe. Tell us about La Lupe's significance to you.
Well, I knew her music thanks to my dad. He is a musician, and I think he always, like, he puts us music in the house, and we've always been fan of salsa, boleros, and also other musical genres. But I think maybe he felt that I like to sing, even if I wasn't too aware of it. And even if I was listening to these boy bands at the time, you know, being a teenager, and then he presented me to La Lupe, which was new for me because I was more used to listening to boleros and salsa singers by male voices that I admire a lot. But it was refreshing for me to listen a female voice singing powerful female messages and very passionate and dramatic. And in my teenage years, it was super captivating. So I started digging more into her songs, and my dad showed me some more, and then he gave me a CD of female Cuban singers, and that also, you know, expanded my female bolero, female singers.
Yeah, that was a new term for me today. I'm a gringa. I'm still learning every day living in South Florida, but I was asking some friends of mine, you know, describe a bolero to me. And I was thinking of it as an emotional ballad, but how would you describe a bolero?
What I love about bolero is that it can be so elegant and so poetic, and at the same time, it can be very raw and very informal. And that's what I love about it, especially, you know, for me, more in Puerto Rico, we are more connected in Cuban music with that. Cuban and Puerto Rico are like family, and also Dominican Republic as well. And I feel that our type of Caribbean bolero sounds different than the rest of Latin America. And for me, what I like about it the most is that it had a lot of attitude to it. And I think maybe it's more characteristic of the Caribbean flow. And I feel that's why I connect with it the most, because it had something very raw, even if it had an orchestra and it's so elegant, like the interpretations were very direct. And you know, they had a lot of attitude and you know, weight that I enjoy when I listen to it.
I love that. Let's listen to some of that attitude. Here's La Tirana by La Lupe. Según tu punto de vista, yo soy la mala vampiresa en tu novela. La gran tirana. So what is it about that song and La Lube that you connect with? You can hear that little, that moment of, ha, there's that attitude in there you described.
Yeah, definitely. And my dad told me that that song was actually written for a man to sing initially. And then I don't know, I don't remember what happened exactly, but someone suggested for it to be for a woman. And it suddenly, like, La Lupe sang it. And it was like, why was this written for a man to sing? Like, no one, like, it had to be for La Lupe. Like, it makes everything more powerful. And she's saying, from your point of view, I am the bad one, the vampireness. I don't know how to say vampire in female, vampirous. In your novel, the great tyrann. So it's like a nice perspective, like from a female point of view. I feel that it gave me like, I don't know, like something more. When I was used to listening more romantic boleros, then suddenly these songs about like cortavenas, I would say in Spanish, like more direct. It was like super, I don't know, like it impacted me a lot. And obviously with her style, with her way of speaking it, like everyone tells me that La Lupe, when she was on stage, she used to take like her shoes off and her jewelry. Like she was like very passionate when she sang, and it gave it like a lot more, and you can feel that energy in the recording. So for me, that is something super powerful because it makes you feel alive when you're hearing the song.
I feel like we can hear some of that. You know, we're going to talk, I'm going to ask you all about the themes of feminism in your music in a little bit. But do you feel like you took a piece of that inspiration from her and take some of that when you're performing as well?
When I'm performing, maybe. I mean, she seemed like she was very intense because she had like another situation. But definitely I do like passion, and she was definitely, I mean, she is an inspiration for me. Like it was like my first female master, I don't remember like the word, but mentor, like a mentor. So yeah, like I think I learned a lot from her because she transmitted so much to me. Like she wasn't just singing a song, she was telling me a story, and I could visualize it while she was singing it, and the whole arrangement and the instrumentation gave it more power, and it was like very, it was like great for me, you know. Like I said, like in my teenage years, you know, like you're with your hormones and you're feeling a lot of things at the same time. And like, it's suddenly, it's like, yeah, like I'm tired to listening to the same romantic things. I'm tired of we as women just being like pleasing the man all the time, and how broken we feel inside. And she was just letting it all out and just saying things up front that gave me like a shift to what bolero was for me at the time.
I love that, because another really passionate Puerto Rican performer, Evie Queen, you also recently collaborated with her. And I'm curious if you see any crossover there between the two styles.
Well, maybe, yeah. I think it impacted me maybe the same way, but in different musical styles, because also Evie was more about my reality at the moment, where perreo and reggaeton was a taboo here in Puerto Rico and was like something that you couldn't listen to. And like, it was like almost you had to hide to dance perreo. And if you were a teenager, it was like worse. So also like as a female, you know, I felt that I didn't want to send the wrong message to the one I was dancing to. Like I was just enjoying the dance. Like it doesn't mean that I want to send another message to you, or you know, and that's what Evie's song about Yo Quiero Bailar, that's what her song was speaking about. And I remember being a teenager and listening to that, and it was like exactly like that's how I feel. Like I'm just enjoying the moment, and I'm just enjoying the dance, and I can do that. It doesn't mean that I'm going to do whatever you want me to do.
Yeah, for those people that might be unfamiliar, tell me a little bit about that song and maybe why that dance. Why was that such a taboo?
Well, perreo obviously is a dance that it can be seen, I mean, it can be sexual for people, but it has been like analyzed throughout the years, and some people say that it is also a dance that is ruled by women. You know, women is the front part of perreo, and it's like the principal movement of the dance. So it's like she is actually free to dance however she wants to, and it's not, and some people can see it as she's pleasing something. But I think that because it was such a taboo and now we are actually like embracing it more, you can see that it's like, it's not like we used to think about it. Like it is a free dance that we choose to do because we enjoy it and because we want to do it. And that's why when we did the protest here in Puerto Rico, we created like the perreo combativo, like the combative perreo dance, as part of a revolution and a protest in the streets. Like, and it's like our ways to keep breaking with, you know, punishing what seems sexual when it's actually like a way of freedom. You know, if we are choosing to do this, if we are enjoying it, and if we want to do it, like it shouldn't be punished. Like it's just a way of free speech, if you can say it like that.
Oh, definitely free speech. I'm curious, what was it finally like when you got to collaborate with Evie Queen? I know that the two of you recently came to Miami.
It was great. Like I finally met her in person when we recorded the video, and that was directed by Claudia Calderon, a Puerto Rican filmmaker. And it was great because like it was also more like the crew was more, it was more with about women. Women were the majority of the crew in the set. And I think she liked that a lot, as well as myself. Like it's nothing to do with men, you know, but sometimes like you feel that you have like your woman crew. It's like a little relief, you know, because you feel that you don't have to over explain yourself and you just get each other a little more in especially in the theme that we were working on about this song, Algo Bonito, that I did with Evie. And I feel that it was very powerful, like to have that female energy on set. And also with Evie, she was super great. And we enjoyed it a lot. Like we met each other in person, but it felt like we already knew each other because we've had like a very good communication. And it was like a at last moment, you know, at last we are doing this video that I liked a lot.
Well, let's listen to some of that song, Algo Bonito. Quiero escuchar algo bonito. Dime algo bonito. Quiero escuchar algo bonito. So as we think of that song, oh, there. As we think about that song and hear some of the beat there, what strikes you? Why did you record that video here in Miami and South Florida? Why was this the place to make that?
Well, it was like a little mix of the timing, you know, like being with Evie at first. Because yeah, like we obviously that's the hard part when you're arranging everything and the timings and everything. And it was easier for her to do it in Miami. But then like, I mean, it was my first time, I think, maybe filming a video in Miami. And when we did it, like it felt like, well, I mean, it was strange for us because I'm used to filming here in Puerto Rico. But then suddenly like we did it there and it was like, yeah, like maybe it had to be here because like everything went great. And I think it was like getting a little out of our comfort zone, but at the same time we had like our Puerto Rican crew all connected and we knew what we were doing. So like it looked great, like the whole art and the atmosphere that it has, like it became like amazing. So we did record like in probably the coldest day in Miami. That was the crazy part, that it was so cold that day, but we had a really fun time.
We're going to take a quick break here. I'm speaking with Ile, the Puerto Rican singer, songwriter, Grammy winner, who's currently on tour in the U.S., and her next show is in Fort Lauderdale this Thursday, March 23rd. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you about the other women who've influenced you so much, like your grandma as well. So that'll be in just a moment here on Sundial. I'm Katie Munoz. Que rindan o por mi descendencia y los ovarios que me guindan. Me importa poco de lo que me tildan. Nunca he creído que calladita me veo más linda. Cuando escupo es como fuego y ácido. Se ve que tu palabra o es como tu desfacido. Yo los mato rápido, el ritmo decapitó. Yo chambeo plazo automático. Yo nunca me la voy a dejar. Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Katie Munoz. Carlos Frias is out today. I'm joined by Puerto Rican singer-songwriter Ile, and we were just getting started, really. I want to jump right back into our conversation and start to ask you about the women in your family. We've been talking about women singer-songwriters, but I understand your grandma wrote a couple of songs on your first album.
Yeah, my grandma, she was amazing. Like, she had a very strong character, and she always, I know that she always loved being with the family, even though she had a face, you know, and always, like, you know, some things, like, she acted as she didn't enjoy them, but I know she had a lot of fun. And one of them was when I tend to imitate other voices, like, I used to sing, like, I come from a big family, so, like, everything was, like, a fun and a joke, you know? So sometimes, like, I just imitated voices, and La Lupe was one of them. Like, I just enjoyed imitating her, and she got angry because I wasn't showing my true voice, and I was just imitating another voice, and she didn't like that. And I say, oh, come on, like, we're just having fun. Like, this is just, you know, like, fun time. And she was like, no, like, you have your own voice, like, you have to use that. Like, and I didn't know what she was talking about. And obviously, when things started to get more professional, that's when I said, oh, like, this is what grandma was telling me all along. Like, I need to, you know, create my own voice when I'm singing my own song, so that I cannot keep imitating other voices.
Well, that's so interesting. I mean, what was it like to have, she sounds like a force of nature, as any good grandma is, right? But thinking about her writing songs that you were singing on your first album, what was that experience working with your grandma like? Many of us don't get to do that.
Well, I mean, it was a mixed feelings, because my sister Milena, she said, like, why don't we get together and listen to grandma's songs? And grandma made us, like, little hamburgers that she used to make us when we were kids. And we started listening to her songs that were amazing. And she did a cassette of her songs sang a cappella by her. Some of them, like, a few of them are sang by her, like, in 1978, but most of them were sang by her a cappella when she was older. And you can listen to this chair where she used to sit on, and it was a very special moment. So I have that cassette with me, and I told her that one of her songs I wanted to record it with Cheo Feliciano, a very famous salsa singer and bolero singer from Puerto Rico, and she loved the idea. So it was like always, like, it became a plan to sing some of her songs, but we didn't know when that was going to happen, because I was touring with Calle 13 and, like, the whole arrangement thing. So when I started recording the song, she died, I think, like, a year before.
I'm sorry.
I started recording it. Yeah. But I feel that she was present in the whole process, because that song of Dolor that I did with Cheo, the musical arrangement was made by my uncle, Joe Pujals, that he's a master arranger here in Puerto Rico, very well respected. And I remember he felt blocked because I feel that he knew my grandma, so he had a very profound feeling, and he felt the pressure. But then suddenly he said, like, the arrangement came to mind, and he felt very inspired, and that's how he did the arrangement for his song. So I felt that the whole, like, her energy was very alive, you know, in the whole process. So I feel that we got a chance to work together, but from a different dimensions.
Oh, I love that. Let's listen to some of that song, Dolor.
Cada día buscando en sueños el amor. ¿Por qué brindarle al mundo mi sonrisa si llevo el llanto en cada risa y en mi alma anidas tu dolor? Fingir, si estoy hastiada ya de ti, vete ya y déjame vivir, soñaré.
I'm curious, Ile, what was it like to be sort of let into your grandma's inner world? Because so many of us know our grandparents just as our grandparents, and we don't always get to see the people they are, right? What they're passionate about, what they do. And I'm curious what getting to know her this way through songs, what's that like for you?
Well, I think one thing I liked about my grandma is that she was, for me, I think she was ahead of her time. She spoke very freely about her relationships and how she won't, I mean, she wasn't willing, I mean, obviously she had tough times, but she wasn't willing to just settle for something that she wasn't feeling good about, you know? Maybe she tried, but when she didn't feel it, like, she just broke up with the person. And for me, that is something that we're not so used to seeing in grandparents, because we're more used to seeing, like, this toxic relationship just have, like, 70-something years of marriage, and you can feel that they don't love each other anymore. So I think I respected that about my grandma and how she spoke freely about that, and also about female sexuality as well. And this song about Dolor, she actually wrote it in 1955 when she divorced my grandfather. And the little stories that I've heard, like, they did had a very toxic relationship. And in the song, she's not speaking about my grandfather. She's just speaking about her pain, you know, about how she's feeling. So maybe it's not even related to my grandfather at all, because, I mean, it was like, it seemed very tough, the way they loved each other, and very dramatic. But I feel that she maybe was seeking to feel happier, and she couldn't find it. And she respected music so much, and she wanted to be in music all her life, but her dad didn't support her, and she felt very sad because of that. And she ended up being a home economics teacher in schools here in Puerto Rico, but she kept writing songs. So that's why she has a lot of songs that are written. And for me, this was kind of my special homage to her, you know, and the respect she had for music.
And I should mention, for my fellow gringos learning along with me all the time, that dolor translates to pain. And really, your grandmother expressed that so beautifully in that song. But it's interesting to hear that she wasn't, her musical dreams weren't supported, because it seems like you had the opposite experience, as we've touched on it here, but you had a very musical family.
Yeah, I did. Like, all of us are related somehow in music or in arts.
What was it like growing up? Tell me about the kinds of music that were playing in your house.
Well, I'm the little one in the house that we grew up in, so I felt that I kind of absorbed all of that musicality. I listened to my mom and my dad stuff. I mean, it was different. My dad likes rock, and also he likes salsa, and other music as well. And my mom liked trova, you know, more like Silvio Rodriguez, Mercedes Sosa, But she also liked Luis Miguel and like baladas, and she also liked salsa as well. So, and my brothers like with rap, heavy metal, and Spanish rock as well. And my sister Milena, she also liked a lot, you know, bossa novas, and also Silvio Rodriguez as well. So I don't know, like it grew up listening to a lot of different types of musicality. And that's why when we work, like, we're not so into genres. We just do whatever we feel like working, and not feeling that pressure of, oh, like you're starting with this type of music, you have to keep doing that. Like, I feel that that limits myself. So I feel that I enjoy it more when I'm just working on whatever type of music I want to work on.
Did you feel any of that pressure, though, growing up, that you had to be musical? I'm curious if you just sort of always assumed you were going to be musical, or if you had considered at any point doing something else.
I didn't feel a pressure. I just knew that I was going to be in music. I just felt so sure about it. I don't know why. Like, I don't remember thinking about anything else. I mean, I did had a moment where I enjoyed photography, you know, but it was also related to art, and you know, like I just knew that I was going to be in art, but especially in music. I didn't expect I was going to be singing. I thought I was going to be in the piano, because that's where I started, and that's where I felt more serious, you know, because I was studying piano, even though now I feel that I don't know the piano at all. But I did start it from that, so I felt that I was going to be in music. Like, it was like so, it made so much sense to me. So it wasn't a pressure, it was a pleasure.
Oh no, it's almost sounds like you're describing a vocation. But it's so interesting that you feel like you don't know the piano anymore. I wonder if that's like you've grown out and evolved away from the piano. But I'm curious too, your brother Renee has often cited the salsa artist Ruben Blades as a source of his inspiration. And I'm curious, just for you, who are the writers that continue to inspire you? Is it La Lupe? Is it someone else? Is it a poet? Or you mentioned storytelling.
Well, it varies, you know. La Lupe and Rubén Blades as well, and a lot of salsa artists here used to sing a lot of songs from Tite Curet Alonso. That was one of our most famous and biggest poets, but also, you know, like composers here in Puerto Rico. Silvia Resach was another famous composer from Puerto Rico. That she was like more into like more boleros, like how do you say bohemian boleros. She has some amazing songs that I liked a lot, and I feel that I connect with Puerto Rican songs that sang, you know, very passionately about how amazing Puerto Rico is, but also that other part that connects with our reality, you know, and how, you know, Puerto Rico, it seems so beautiful, but at the same time, it struggles so much. So I feel that I liked those type of songs that are expressed in a lot of salsa songs, especially.
So you're absorbing all of that. I'm just picturing a young Ile. You're absorbing all that different kind of music in your house from your parents, your grandparents, your brothers, and you think you're going to be going into really more of the piano, work with the piano. What's the story about how you found singing?
Well, I think it was there all the time. Like when I was like a baby, like I used to sing, you know, all the time, and I kept growing up, and I was in some choruses, and but I mean, if singing was always what I enjoyed the most, maybe, but I didn't realize it as something serious or professional, because I felt it more like a hobby, and I was having a lot of fun with it. So I never expected it to be my path, you know, but maybe that was because I was little, you know, at the time, but my whole family enjoyed it a lot. So I think they had more
present that vision of me than I did myself. So when my brothers René and Eduardo invited me to be a part of Calle 13, like it didn't make sense for me because they wanted me to sing. But then I understood, like, they were my older brothers, so they knew that I enjoyed singing. It was just something that I wasn't clear enough myself.
Well, you've talked a lot in the past about how your family is so central to your life, but it's been a struggle to find your own voice. And I'm curious if that's still the case for you and what you mean by that.
Yeah, obviously at the beginning, I was just, I remember René when we record our first song, La Guacatona, he started by saying to me, oh, like sing this song imitated by La Lupe, for example. And I sang it like that. And then he said, okay, like now do it like this other person. And I just did it. And then he said, okay, now do it like as if you were doing it. And I said, what? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to do that. But actually, like, Evie Queen was like my inspiration for that, because like I didn't know what women to think about in this genre, you know. And then suddenly, like, I felt inspired by her, and I started to explore connecting that with myself. But it took me a while, actually, because at the beginning, you always want to sound amazing, and you always want to feel like you're doing it right and perfect, and you're sounding like someone you admire. But it wasn't until I realized, like, I don't have to feel like that. I don't want to feel satisfied hearing my voice sounding like someone else. Like, I want to feel satisfied having my own voice and my own personality. And that's when I started to get deeper into the meanings of the song, like not just singing the song or the lyrics that I was supposed to sing, just like trying to find the meaning behind it and trying to connect it with myself.
When you started performing when you were a kid, so thinking about, you know, just how much you've matured, how has your performance and your stage presence evolved as you've really grown up with your music? You know, thinking of Calle 13 versus your solo career.
Well, I feel that I enjoyed, I mean, my years with Calle 13 were amazing, were super unexpected, and I learned a lot. But it was a very different energy, and it was very intense. It was 10 intense years that I, like, they were very fun also. But I think that I needed to go somewhere else, and I've always loved Bolero, and I wanted to kind of reconnect with that rich musicality that I feel that we have here in the Caribbean, but it has been like lost a little throughout the years. So I felt that need, you know, to reconnect with that energy, but in a more contemporary time. So I started, you know, in a very different energy than Calle 13, and I feel that I needed that. And now I feel like as if I was like a little reborn, you know. I mean, with Calle 13, I was more connected to their project, like to my brother's project. And now I feel that I'm more connected in my own project. So it's something, it's hard, you know, because it's a very deep process. And for me, especially, that I feel that it needs to make sense to me. Like I just cannot flow into something that it's superficial. Like I feel that I need to be connected with myself and that my project feels honest, you know. So I feel that I needed to grow into my solo project a lot, and I feel that I feel super different. Like I'm also more mature, I'm older, and I've learned a lot, and I love to keep learning more and more. And I feel that the stage is that space where I feel the most free and liberating.
When you recently performed on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, I want to listen to some of that for a minute. The song is Mentiras con Cariño.
Lo único que pido.
Sheila, in general, what do you like about performing on your own versus collaborating?
Well, it's something that I think I've been learning more lately. I think that I like I'm more used to working on my own because I feel that I have more control, obviously, I feel that my process can be slower sometimes, and I feel that I need like time, and sometimes collaborating can be quicker, and I feel that I need to make sure that we are on the same page and everything feels connected and in the right place. So it's maybe like it's a different process, but I feel that I enjoy both of them differently. So yeah, you know, it has been like fun also to I feel that I need to be very true to how I'm feeling. Like if I don't feel a connection or something, like I maybe won't force it to happen.
We're going to take another quick break here. My guest is Ile, the Puerto Rican singer-songwriter. She is touring around the U.S., and her next stop is Fort Lauderdale this Thursday at The Angelus. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back. I'm going to ask you about the significance of Hurricane Maria in your music.
Okay.
We're back on Sundial. Carlos Frias is out today. I'm Katie Munoz. I'm talking with Ileana Cabra, the Puerto Rican singer-songwriter you probably know as Ile. And we were talking about some of her influences. We've been talking about her family. I want to talk about some of the politics in your music, Ile, because let's take a step back together. The year is 2019, and in San Juan, protests break out after broken promises during the rebuilding that followed Hurricane Maria. You had a song with Bad Bunny and your brother, Residente, Afilando los Cuchillos, and it became so significant to this group of protesters. So I want to start here and listen for just a moment.
Vamos cortante como los cuchillos, sacando chispa hasta llegar al filo. Hay que arrancar la maleza del plantío, pa' que ninguno se aproveche de lo mío.
El pueblo no aguanta más injusticia. Se cansó de tus mentiras y de que manipulen las noticias. Ey, ey, todos los combos, los caseríos, somos nuestra milicia.
Tell me about how this song came together, because people write songs for all kinds of reasons. What was your primary driver for this song? Was it anger?
Definitely. It was actually my brother René who called me and said to me, like, they were working on this song together, and he wanted me to explore with the chorus. So I didn't know about the song. I mean, he didn't show me anything because they were working on it still. But he just told me about, you know, it's, you know, about sharpening the knives. And that was the only thing that he told me. But obviously, because of the moment we were living and I was here, like in the protest that were going on, like I knew the energy, you know, I understood what he wanted. So I started playing around, and that's when I wrote the chorus, and I showed it to my brother, and he said, like, yeah, that's it. That's amazing. But then after the song was finished, that's when I got the chance to listen to my brother's part and also Bad Bunny's part. So then, I mean, it became like almost an anthem in those days.
And I think from that, I'm so curious about it because it's really not often done in English, but it can be done in Spanish. Talk to me about the first time you realized that you could get across something so serious, this important message behind a beat that's very danceable.
I don't know, maybe it's a part of our culture. I think we here in Puerto Rico, we are very used to rhythms and chantings and dancing as a way of release, you know, as a protest, you know, and a revolution. It's something that we always do in the streets, you know. We sing songs about what is happening in in the social and political situation, and we sing it and we dance it very freely, and it's like our way to connect more with each other. So I feel that what that song represented at the time was exactly that. I feel that we still need more songs that make us feel more together in situations that are tougher and harder for us to confront. And I feel that that song connected exactly in that moment that we were living, because it came from that honesty and that honest anger we were actually feeling as Puerto Ricans. Energy was like transmitted directly to the people, and that's why they were seeking to that song all the time. And in the protest, a lot of people in their cars and in the streets, they were blasting it, because I feel that it just expressed like the exact emotion that we were feeling at the time.
I'm envious because I don't know my right foot from my left foot in terms of rhythm, but you can really tell that this song, so many people connected with it, and it was an outlet for them to express their frustration and their feelings. You've said in the past that the Puerto Rican government didn't learn anything from Hurricane Maria. I want to know if you still believe that or if anything has changed.
Well, I think the sad part is that it's like you feel that Hurricane Maria, Hurricane Fiona, and all the catastrophes we've been living here in Puerto Rico became basically an advantage for wealthy people. And that's the sad part, that, you know, the government is supporting that, you know, is supporting more the well-being of the wealthy people rather than the people of Puerto Rico. And you feel a lot of displacements here in a lot of communities, and we are feeling left out, and the island feels kind of empty, you know, and it's very sad, not only to feel that from the government that has always been corrupt, but that we are so confused by it, and we don't know even how to feel about it, you know, as a country, because we've always had this idea that the United States, it's like superior to us. And that's what the colony does, actually. It makes you feel so bad about yourself and about who you are, that you forget about your worth, you know, and you feel unworthy. And that's how we are feeling now, that we are confronting a very tough situation that I know that is not only happening in Puerto Rico, but it's happening around the world. But obviously, Puerto Rico being a small island, it makes it easier for, especially for the United States that don't pay taxes here in Puerto Rico, to feel that they are just powerful enough to take our country from us. But we are little by little fighting against that and trying to regain our power, but it's so hard and so sad and tough that it takes time. But it's actually that part after the catastrophes that are almost like bigger than the catastrophes itself. Like it's what comes after that. And we are right now living that very hard part.
Where do you go in Puerto Rico when you want a quiet moment just to yourself?
I go to the mountains, I think. It's beautiful. I mean, I love the sea as well, but the sea is usually more crowded and the beaches. So I feel that in the mountains it's almost like more musical to me. Like you hear the... You know, it's another energy. You hear it at night. You hear the coquis like almost like all over the place, and it's a little colder, but you know, warm at the same time. It's like that in between feeling, and the view is incredible, and you feel like on top of something, you know, and it gives you power, and the mountains have that, you know, powerful energy that I feel that we need to absorb sometimes. So, yeah.
Well, I think that's just really beautiful. I want to ask you, too, about your most recent album, Nacarile, came out in 2022. And it was this blend of passionate but deeply political. And you're championing championing these causes that you believe in, while you also call out everything from oppression towards women to corruption in government. And I want to listen to this single, Encantos, from this album. Again, it's Nacarile. It's got 10 million streams and it's already won a Latin Grammy. Let's take a listen.
Yo te puedo sentir, aunque no esté ni cerca, yo te puedo sentir, aunque no esté ni cerca, porque te pienso al dormir y te sueño de pie.
What is the feminism piece behind this, Ile? Are you being inspired by feminism? Was it a specific moment for you, like a feminism awakening?
I just enjoy, you know, digging more into our own perspectives. I feel that patriarchy has been so hard on ourselves that it has taken us a while to understand more deeply about how we are as women. You know, like, we have been working so hard into demonstrating how we are, but it has been more towards pleasing patriarchy itself. And now we are breaking all those patterns, just being the way we are and the way we feel more free without feeling the need to please anybody, you know? And I feel free when I write from that place as a woman. And I feel that we go through so many things that can be easily passed by, you know, normal abuses, like micro machismos that are still there, you know? And one of them is female sexuality. You know, female sexuality is still a taboo. It's still something that a lot of people feel offended by that. And we are so not offended by male sexuality. And it's crazy. And this song, Encantos, it's a little bit about that female sexuality feeling, you know, and at the same time, it's about how you idolize something or someone, and you kind of put it as if we're like a god, you know, and suddenly you get closer and closer to that form, and it suddenly can be better than you expected, or it can be not at all what you expected. And it's just about that, you know, about when those moments when we glorify something, and it's especially when you're feeling like maybe connected to someone, that a lot of things can happen inside you. And as a woman, we don't tend to talk about those details enough because, you know, a lot of people can be offended by that. But now we are speaking more openly and feeling that we can have that space where we talk about how we feel inside.
You've certainly done that through your music, through your album, Nacarile, and certainly the single Encantos. Congratulations on the Latin Grammy.
Thank you so much.
We're going to have to leave it there today. Thank you so much, Ile.
Thank you.
My guest has been Ileana Cabra. You know her as Ile. She is the Puerto Rican singer-songwriter. She is closing her U.S. tour here in Fort Lauderdale on Thursday, March 23rd. Go check it out. And that's Sundial for today, March 20th. Leslie Ovalle Atkinson is our lead producer. Elisa Baena is our producer and social media editor. Sergio Bustos is WLRN's VP of News. Peter J. Mertz is WLRN's Vice President of Radio and Sundial's engineer. And our theme music is by the Miami Afro-Cuban funk band Palo at gopalo.com. You can download a podcast of this program or any that you might have missed by searching WLRN Sundial in your podcast app. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the public radio journalist who left the news cycle to join the circus. Jacques Zwipper is in town for his whip-cracking comedy act, and you can catch him at the Florida Renaissance Festival in Deerfield Beach. But first, he stopped by Sundial. I'm Katie Munoz, WLRN's Director of Live Programming for shows like Sundial. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed.
WLRN Public Media.